Okay, welcome back. Before we start on networking, we know that we've got a stack of questions that are backing up for us, and we're doing our best. We'll try and catch up with them as best we can obviously over the morning. And any we don't have time to tackle now, through the lunch hour, once we've had a bit of a break ourselves, we'll get on and try and answer those. So I ask for your patience and understanding on that. So we'll get to them. We'll get to them. However, the subject for this sort of hour, less than an hour, is the networking on Windows Phone. So this is what we're going to cover now. So on the agenda, that puts us actually second on session two. Application data storage was a pretty big topic. So we're now going into networks, which is also a big topic, but not perhaps so complicated. And there's some kind of fun stuff in here that I hope you'll enjoy and appreciate.
Any cheese? I've got cheese this afternoon. And there you go.
Good.
Stick around this afternoon. You get the cheese. Yeah.
We did have a comment yesterday that there was just enough cheese. It sounds like we're kind of borderline.
I mentioned it once, so that was probably where it ended. Yes.
So, quick overview of networking for Windows Phone. We're going to look at the web client API, HTTP web request, the new socket support, which was one of the top requests.
Big wish list.
The big wish list for Mango was database, which you've just covered, and sockets. So those two, we're going to have a quick look at that. I'm going to look at OData as well. I mentioned in the last talk this link to OData, and that's kind of interesting. And then back to this old topic of serialization, which I like very much. Serialization actually also occurs, of course, when you're communicating across networks. So your data has to be transformed into a serialized format.
This is basically pushing objects from A to B over a network.
Exactly. You've got a service and you make a request from your phone. I want to pull a collection of objects that mean something to me. So serialization. Again, that has implications for performance and efficiency. So I've got an interesting demo to round off this session on that. Right. So what we've got on networking Windows Phone is lots of it. So a phone is obviously primarily it's a communications device. Some people even allegedly use them for making phone calls.
I never use mine for that one. Good gracious.
Right. So at an application programming level, of course, we've got support for the Microsoft networking stack, really. We can call WCF services. Not all of them. There's a subset of the capabilities. We've got the HTTP web request for making HTTP web requests, oddly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Web client, which is a kind of low-level, dumbed-down, easy form of making HTTP requests to back-end servers. And we've got socket support. And there's a few sort of more complex things there that we can't do on the phone. But you'll find that the networking support we've got is rich and capable, and you can create some really nice networked applications. And obviously, networking is crucial to a phone app because although there are a few apps that you can think of for the phone that don't need any network connectivity, like
rude noisemakers.
I was going to say that. I was going to use a more Anglo-Saxon
sound
description.
Effect generators. We could call those.
Yes, indeed. But most apps that are alive and want to communicate to the phone user, they're going to have to react to external events. And that basically means calling out to some service somehow in order to find out stuff that's of interest. So. Right, now, for simple requests, the easy one to use is the Web Client API. So this had a big kind of red flag over it in 7.0. The reason for this was that the Web Client API in 7.0, easy to use though it was, always ran on the UI thread, on the main thread, on your main application code. So you couldn't get it to actually run, even though the requests themselves are async, any processing you did on that always ran back on the UI thread. So when stuff is happening on the UI thread, it means basically the UI can't interact with the user, so you get stuttering jolts in the user experience, and it's not a good thing. So this was basically a void in 7.0, but it's been completely reworked for Mango. So it now you can still run it on the UI thread if that's what you really want to do, but I would advise you not to do that. It's best to do this kind of stuff on a background thread. So now the callback actually executes on the originating thread. So in other words, the same thread where you made the initial request from. The code looks a bit like this. So you simply create an instance of a web client there on the top line, a new instance of a web client. Then you hook some events on it. There's got download progress change. You can get progress reports, download string completed, and open read completed. So you can read stuff and read strings and that sort of thing. And a very typical usage is there in the middle of that with the web client button click, where you call the, it's got a download string, string async method. Now, one thing about Silverlight on Windows Phone is that all networking operations are async. You cannot do synchronous. The reason for this is from performance point of view.
User is king.
User is king. And this is a legacy, if you like, from desktop Silverlight as well. The same is true for a desktop Silverlight app running in the browser. If you're making network calls, you don't know how long they're going to happen. So async should just be the norm. It's so much so that that is the only APIs that are offered. So there you've got an example where you're going off and pulling an XML file from an RSS dump. And the events fire, and then down at the bottom, you get your client download string completed, and you get your result. Nice and easy. So I've got a little demo of that, which has been supplied to me by my good friend here, Mr. Miles. So, Rob, what the hell does this do?
It basically, it's a Twitter feed reader.
Okay.
And it'll actually go online, pull down. You can ask Twitter to give you the feeds in XML, which Link can then consume and produce a nice set of objects you can then bind to a Silverlight page. So this, although it looks quite a nice-looking application, is in fact dead simple. The one that Andy's showing you now, although I don't think he is showing it because he's not showing his desktop, one that Andy is not showing you now,
the one that
but
Andy's
will
about to show
in
you.
A moment,
yeah.
Just takes...
There you go.
Are we sure? Oh, yes, here we go. It basically takes the Twitter feed and makes the objects and binds it to it. What I'm showing you here is some test objects that I made just to prove that the thing worked. But if we hit the load button at the bottom, it'll then build a web request, get the XML back from my live Twitter feed, and there you go. I've got a link to my blog, my picture is there. And these are just simple Silverlight items. There's two stack panels being used to make this. And then we have the data in those bound to the objects that are created from the link query that runs against the XML that comes back from Twitter.
Shall we look at the code?
Absolutely. And I'll take a breath.
So here's the logic. Very, very simple stuff. Here's a declaration of a field in our main page class of type web client.
The two you can see below are my sample
objects we've created there, which are the ones we first saw. Here's where we actually do the stuff. We actually initialize our web client object, make a new instance of it. We hook up the download string completed event handler, which means we're going off when it completes, we're going to call this method client download string completed. And then when you press the load button click, that's where we actually fire off the request. First of all, we set the URL where we're going to go, which is twitter.com, statuses, user timeline, name textbox.txt, which is Rob Miles at the moment. .xml, and then we call download string async, and it just downloads that string. So we get, eventually, it's an async request, we get the response back, and here we are. And this is what executes when we get it back. And here's some X element stuff, and then we are doing a link to XML query here to read out of this Twitter elements X element object any descendants of type status with a tag of status. And then we're actually projecting that, good word, into new Twig, building new Twitter post objects, which are our business objects in memory that are then bound to the UI.
Yeah. So there is no more code than this, apart from a little bit of stuff in the XML, XAML, sorry, for the page. It's tiny, and it works a treat, and it's quite impressive. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Now, like I said, it's a good citizen in 7.5, avoid in 7.0, but web client is a good way. If you don't want to get, you don't need to do heavy-duty programming. You don't need to get at the HTTP headers and all that kind of good stuff. If you're just doing simple, get me that.
Get me some stuff.
Get me some stuff. That's the one for you. Easy to use. All right. I remember to switch back.
I'm watching.
Keep prompting me.
I'm watching you. Yeah. I'm watching you.
Yeah. And we're in here.
So, feel free to steal that code and use it, because it's actually quite a few nice techniques in there. Make good use.
But if you want more control, you need to sort of get it some headers and that sort of thing. Then what you need to use is the HTTP web request API. So here's an example here of creating an HTTP web request object, which has the static method HTTP web request.create that you call. You give it the URI where you want to go, and then you call a begin get response, again, asynchronous.
Yep.
So you're making a call to some URI out on the internet, and you're going to get your response back. And then, again, we've got a callback method that executes when the actual data has been retrieved. And in this case, obviously, this is executing on a background thread, which is why the bottom few lines of the code there begin with this dot dispatcher dot begin invoke. That is the way, for those of you who are new to Silverlight and Windows Phone, if you've just called this dot dispatcher dot begin invoke, and then inside the brackets you give it, in this case, an anonymous delegate, so all that stuff there means go and take this code, please, the two lines there, this dot downloaded text dot text equals reader dot read to read to end, and the visibility, it says take those couple of lines, please, and go and execute them back on the UI thread. And there's a key thing which we haven't mentioned with Silverlight. Is if you touch a UI control, as like in this example, we're setting a control that's called downloaded text, which I guess will be a text block, and another control called text viewer, and we're setting properties on that. You cannot do that from a background thread. That sort of thing has to be done in the UI thread. So this pattern you'll see very frequently, this dot dispatcher dot begin invoke. So that's a kind of a quick review of HTTP web request. There's a lot more you can do, and I'm going to show you a specific example of the more you can do with the next demo. So back into Visual Studio, I'm going to go and open my next one, which is HTTP web request. Now this is a dumbed-down version, if you like, of something I'm going to talk about a little bit later on in this section as well. This is an app in this project, in this solution. I've got two apps. I've got a phone app called WP7 Call HTTP Web Request, and I've also got an OData service, WCF Data Services service. So it's running on my desktop in localhost, and if I just run this up now, it will fire up the built-in web server in Visual Studio. My OData service is running on that, and then the UI will turn up when I bring that to the foreground. And we've stopped on a breakpoint. Now, often the reason why you're going to use an HTTP web request rather than, you could call no data service just XML. You could use web client and pull it back as a string and then use link to XML. But OData system has a lot of things to make it easier to program it. And one of the characteristics of an OData service, a WCF Data Services service, is that it can format data on the wire. So when it's being transferred from the web server to your phone, the data format, the serialization format it will use for that data can be XML or it can be JSON. Now, for reasons that will become obvious later in this talk, JSON is much preferable in my mind, although it does make you have to write a little bit more code, unfortunately. So XML is the brain-dead easy version. But JSON is very, very much more efficient.
You had a question about JSON, just come in and you're answering it. Perfect.
Okay, so here we go. So this is 9 times out of 10, if I'm doing HTTP web requests, it's because I'm calling a JSON service. So here's the pattern, actually. So first of all, I've got the breakpoint stopped on creating the HTTP web request, and it's creating to localhost 1481, and I'm just going to check that really is what it's running on. Yes, it is, thank goodness. Cassini is running on 1481. One thing you'll find when you do this kind of stuff is that Visual Studio might quite often dynamically assign ports to your web services, which is disappointing when your phone is expecting it to be on a different port. So, and then the next line, here we go, we're setting an HTTP request header. So the accept header is a instruction to the back-end server and say, well, actually, I'm only going to accept a response that's formatted in JSON, please. I'm not interested in your XML option. I want JSON. And then we call begin get response to go and start the request going off. And then when it executes, when we get our response back, we're going to drop down into got JSON, and I've got another breakpoint in there. So let's just let that run. By the way, what are we looking at here? Here's the UI at the moment. Nothing, because what it's going to do is pull the data up and then it shows it in a list box. So I'm just going to let that run, and the request is being made to the back-end service, and now we've drop down into got.json, and this is where you then have to get an HTTP web response to actually get a response stream to it in order to pull the response data out. So here's where we get our HTTP web response. Then we get a stream into that response, and then we can use our stream to pull the data out. So this is what this is doing. We're pulling the data out. And for those of you interested in what JSON looks like, if you haven't come across it before, I just hover over this. This is data, and then if I can actually get the focus right, show it up in the visualizer. This is JSON. So this is data formatted in JSON format.
JSON's lovely.
It is. It's really good. It's very efficient. Yep. Yeah. I won't go into the syntax, but basically this is, says this is an object. Curly brackets is an object, and that's a property. So it's got a property of D. And then square brackets means what follows is a collection and blah, blah, blah.
There's a very good little roadmap that describes it all that you can find on the JSON site. It's wonderfully written and very clever. Yeah. Question come in. What happens if the halfway through my web client request, the server dies, so I never get an answer back? The asynchronous call never comes back. Now you can set timeouts, can't you?
Well, it has a built-in timeout. So you'll get a built-in timeout. So this is the sort of thing, web client, you can't sort of change very much. This is typically another reason why you want to go down to HTTP web request. Yes, there are properties on a web request where you can set the request timeout. So if you don't get a response within that timeout, and by default, and you'll see this a lot when you're doing this programming, the default is kind of like, I don't know, a minute or something. So in debugging, you'll be sitting there thinking, what's going on? It's not working. Why is it not working? And then eventually you'll get the exception thrown because it's timed out. There's no service there or whatever. So that's JSON, and that is actually from the Northwind database, the entire supplier database, which is not that many records, in JSON format. And actually, there's an example of using JSON.NET to then take that that JSON formatted data and you deserialize it into this feed, which is now becomes as a list of supplier objects. So that's turned it back into .NET objects that we can then use as the item source of our list box. So we'll just let that run, and it tells you how many characters there are, and we'll come back to this when we talk about the efficiency of different serialized wire deserialization formats. 17,000 characters, and then there's our list box, which is showing those objects. They've been deserialized from JSON, turned back into .NET objects, and then bound to the list box and shown on the UI. So again, this sample is on all the stuff you can get when I get around to packaging it up, which will be around about lunchtime.
Okay.
All right. So let's kill that, and then we'll just head back to... Why am I not seeing the... Am I still on live meeting here? I'm not seeing the normal... Oh,
no,
it's
you're,
up there.
You're fine. You're good. I can see what you're doing, but you may have to go back to the...
How do I go back? I'm seeing something strange here.
Oh, my goodness. Aliens. I don't know. Hang on. I'll drag it back. Because I still have
take
the
me back.
Take you back.
Take
you back home.
Rob.
You want to go back
to... You're in control.
Mango using networks. There you go. Now I can see that. And you should have it back now as well. So.
I have, yeah.
Splendid.
Great.
Nice and useful.
So that's HTTP web request. Sockets. New support. Big ask from the developer community. We didn't have sockets in 7.0.
What a socket is, by the way, for those that haven't hit sockets before, a socket is basically a way in which I can push information and the system, the other end, just receives it like that. I like a pipe, you can push stuff down. A web request is, I ask Andy for something and he gives me the answer back at some later time. And we have a transaction that's based on behaving that. In a socket, I can just push information down when I feel like it and the system at the end goes ping and receives that.
Correct? Yeah. That's right, and both web client and HTTP web request are using the HTTP protocol, which is a particular way that's been formatted for a client computer and a server computer to exchange messages. And that's built on top of, you get this whole networking stack, and the HTTP is built on top of TCP/IP. And really, when we're talking sockets, you're dropping down to that next level down. We're getting down to actually exchanging messages in a much more freeform and less protocol-constrained way. So TCP/IP or UDP/IP are the two ways of doing this thing. You'll often hear the term of connection-oriented and connection-disoriented? No, connection-less.
Connection-disoriented. Sounds good. That's me. Hello.
So connection, or TCP IP, you actually make a connection to the other end, and then you exchange messages, and then you drop the connection. And it's got built-in reliable communication. TCP IP means that you know that the message is going to get there, and there's kind of retries, and there's checksums and things. So it's a reliable communication format, TCP IP. You'll get exceptions, of course, if the connection is dropped. But as long as the network connection is there, you know that you can send the message over TCP IP and the other end will get it. UDP IP, though, is not reliable. It's basically a broadcast format. You just send it out to on the network. You can limit it to a particular IP address that you want to send it to. So you can be aiming it at a particular host or a whole group of hosts. So you can just do a multicast. So you say you just throw some stuff out on UDP IP and anybody who's listening will receive it. If they're not listening, they won't, of course. So that's connectionless. It's not making a physical... You don't actually sort of say, hi, I want to connect to you, and then you set up a connection.
The time we use things like UDP is basically if you're streaming something, where it doesn't... If you lose the frame, there's no point in getting it back, because it's too late. So you just spew stuff out, and if it gets there, it gets there, and we play it. If it doesn't, we ignore it and just keep on going. So that's basically what you use that for.
Yep. So I'm going to go back with trepidation to my desktop that I couldn't get out of before.
I'll bring you back, Andy. I've got you back.
So I've got the toolbar this time.
Hey, jolly good.
That was slightly worrying before. open project solution. Right, let's go and get the next one, which is...
Got a question about how the code snippets work. Do you have a little tool that creates those?
No, I have a student.
Okay, fair enough. I'm a person. Okay.
I mean, there are tools out there.
Code snippets are great, and there are some tools out there. If you read the help in Visual Studio, it tells you how to actually use them, but not really how to make them. But there are some tools out there. If you do some searching around, they are very useful and great fun to play with.
Yes, I have Rachel. Rachel's cool. So this is just the code for this is very simple. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about this. But we've got some fields up here where we've defined things that affect the... What we're going to do is do a... this is going to be a chat application. This is a chat application where we can put a message in and just send it out to a particular group address, 224.0.1.1. This is the address of the multicast group to join. So you join the group and then you sit on a receive loop to wait to listen to stuff that gets sent to you, and you can also send messages. So it's just kind of exactly like a chat thing. We have a receive buffer. We're really into kind of low-level programming, network programming here. Let's see then. Here we go. This is where you join the group. So we set the receive buffer up. We create a UDP AnySource multicast client object. This is the one that's going to sit and read. We actually give it the range of addresses that we want to listen to and the UDP IP, the TCP IP port number that we're going to use. And then you join the group. Here we go. We begin join group again, asynchronous. And then when that completes, this is an asynchronous delegate. So this actually is like an event handler for when it does come back. But they have to call end join group, and then you set a few properties, and we're going to send a message to everybody, say, yeah, I've joined the group. And then once you've joined the group, then we sit and do receive, which means we're listening for messages that are going to come in. So receive is down here. Begin receive dot from group. I'm not going to walk through all of this. You can have a look at this code, and it's well commented, and you can figure out what's going on. And then also, of course, we have the ability to send a message to the group. So once you're in the group, you can send stuff. So let's do that. So I'm going to run up an emulator.
Oh, this is the very impressive one.
And then
this is the one which this will blow your socks off, people, if you're wearing socks.
Indeed, those of you who are wearing socks.
Those of you that are wearing stockings.
I'm going to open the same solution in another copy of Visual Studio. And I'm going to run it on another emulator.
It's possible with a bit of modification to
head off the inevitable questions about how do you do this. Well, all I'd say is use your favourite search engine. I'll post something, or Rob will post something up on our blogs before the end of the day. So here we've got two emulators running on here, and they joined the same multicast group. So we can put a message in. I'm just going to hit page up because I don't want to type it in through there. Hello, world. That's a bit unimaginative, but we'll send that to the group. And you see that's gone to the other side. Is that banned? I'm not allowed to do Hello World. Sorry.
Type in Goodbye Cruel World.
Special prize to the first person who can tell me who recorded that song.
No, I'm not allowed to enter.
So you see, this is a chat application, so yeah. There you go. Whatever. So
I think you're getting carried away now, but it's impressive and it works.
There you go. Yes, it's simple enough programming. It's low-level network programming is the point of this. So we'll kill those, and actually we'll completely kill. Which one was my... I've forgotten which one was my current emulator. Anyway, that one's going. That was sockets. That's an example of UDPIP, the sort of thing you do in chat, whereas TCPIP, like I say, is a bit... there's slightly different techniques, but essentially you're working at the same level of the networking stack. Right, what about sort of web services? So obviously TCPIP sockets is very low level, whereas most of the time, if you're going to be creating an app that is going to be talking to a cloud service or to an in-premise service, you've got, you know, a Windows server running some web services that are there to serve your mobile clients, then you're going to tend to use a higher level of networking abstraction. And this is called what web services is all about.
Basically, this means that rather than getting back a lump of data, you get an object back, which you can hit against, because there's the system actually just does all the marshalling and messing around and pushes the thing up and brings it back as a thing you can easily use. Yep. And data bind, if you want to, which is nice.
Indeed. Yeah. So, and this, what we call old-style ASMX services, which was ASP.NET Web Services, they should just work. WCF services are kind of replaced that, but essentially give you a bit more flexibility. And they do require that you use basic HTTP binding, for those of you who do WCF. I'm not going to say anything more than that, other than that that is required for Windows Phone clients, so...
you can do HTTPS too, can't you? Correct?
Well, certainly, that's... Yeah, you use the basic HTTP binding, but you can use SSL, for sure. That's kind of not quite
secure,
the same thing.
Yeah.
So you can have secure services. It doesn't have to be HTTP, but basically, the higher levels of binding include sort of for full Windows clients. There's all kinds of stuff about authentication in there that aren't supported by Windows Phone, so... So basically, you can call a lot of web services. A little bit of work needed, perhaps, to dumb them down. But increasingly, full SOAP services, which what those we're calling them. SOAP stands for Simple Object Access Protocol.
Someone said Pink Floyd for the record names. Wrong.
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 No,
sorry. There
same,
are two
same
right
kind
answers.
Of era.
There are two right answers.
Oh, okay. Well done.
But yeah.
Yeah. SOAP. SOAP web services, that's like HTTP, it's another protocol layered on top of HTTP, and it's a way for clients and servers to exchange objects. And that's the old style, but it's kind of a rigid thing. Whereas increasingly with this thing, we're moving to this thing called REST, which stands for Representational State Transfer. But essentially, it's kind of a simple HTTP-based way of exchanging objects. And there's a very good way of building them within the Microsoft tool stack. And it's really, I would recommend that you try and use this as the way of exposing data to your clients, because it's efficient. And with mobile phone clients, we're always looking for efficiency. Networks are often of poor quality, and you need to have your network transfers as compact as possible. What we're talking about when we talk about REST and WCF is what we're talking about is OData, really, WCF data services. So WCF data services is an easy way of building REST-based web services, and I'm going to show you how you do this in a minute. Now, in terms of consuming that, you can actually very easily do link queries against against objects that are exposed by an OData service, and again, I'll show you this in a moment. The link queries are actually translated into simple HTTP requests to the other side, which simply use HTTP GET to pull records back, or HTTP POST to actually put a new record into the collection, HTTP DELETE, obviously, to actually delete a record. So it's actually built on top of the HTTP verbs, which have been around for decades. And it's simple, and it works. And it's kind of... Unless you need the complexity of full SOAP web services, in many cases, this is all that you need. And in Mango, we've got this OData client library, data services client, which is a client-side library which eases interaction with OData services. So you, with all web services, whether they're RESTful ones, or well, WCF data services, or they're SOAP ones, in Visual Studio, you can right-click on the project and say add service reference.
Yeah.
And what it does is it goes and interrogates the service, which doesn't work with third-party REST services, but does work with WCF data services built with the Microsoft stack. But what happens when you do add service reference, what it actually does is it goes over the network and it asks the service, what's your interface? What do I need to know in order to talk to you? So it gives you back this metadata. This is happening in Visual Studio. This is the tools that are doing it for you. So it interrogates that
this is the WSDL stuff.
This is the WSDL stuff,
yes,
yeah.
Well,
with WCF data services, there's another one called actually Data Service Util, in fact, what it's running under the covers. So add service reference, it looks at the metadata and it generates for you a client-side library, a proxy. So it gives you easy-to-use methods and the objects that you're going to get pulled back. And you include that on your project and it makes accessing the service a breeze. It makes programming of it easy. So add service reference will work most of the time. You can actually go down and run the command line tool, this data service util, as is shown on this slide, if for some reason the add service reference thing doesn't work. So some services need a little bit more tweaking, but in most cases, add service reference will be all that you need. And then when you fetch data from an OData service using the data service client library, you'll see at the top here we've got, this is an example of a view model class. Again, this is a class in your application that you use for getting the data and for presenting the data to the rest of the application as a source for data binding, that sort of thing. And you'll look at this Netflix view model. You see there's a private field member at the top, which is of type data service collection title. So that is a collection of title objects. And title is an object that you're fetching back from this OData service that will have been built for you when you add service reference. It understands that you're going to get title objects back from this. And then also, just below that, we've got a Netflix catalog, which is a context object, similar to the data context we were talking about with Link to SQL. Yeah, so I was talking about the code for accessing an OData service. And in the constructor of this view model class, we create an instance of, in this case, Netflix catalog. This Netflix catalog is the client-side proxy object that we've created for accessing the Netflix OData service. And you give it the URI where the data is, and then you can have methods like getTitles, which is one that we've created in our view model here, but the important method on the titles data service collection is loadAsync. And what that does is it goes off to the remote data OData service, pulls the records back, and then the load completed will fire when we've got our data back. And then you can what you get is an enumerable of whatever object it is you're pulling back. So you can for each them, you can do link queries on it. It's a very easy way of accessing data. And it's almost like you write code, you don't have to write any HTTP web requests. That's all handled for you under the covers.
So this is a higher level abstraction, basically.
Indeed it is. Yeah,
that's
indeed
a good phrase to use, Rob.
So it's kind of easier to show than it is to explain, to be honest. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. All right, so let's open the sample. This guy. So this, at the moment, is just a phone app. And what we're going to do is build the... I'm actually going to, unusually for a phone presentation, I'm going to build the server side of the service just to show you how easy it is.
Okay.
So I'm going to add a new project to this solution.
Talking about solutions and projects, you can have a single solution that contains both client code and the server code at the same time?
That is true if you've got a professional, one of the paid editions.
The posh ones. Otherwise, you can get a server edition of Studio Express.
Web, whatever it is, Visual Studio 2010 Express
for
Web Developers Edition in order to create this service. So you can have both of them installed on your development system. You can have the free phone tools, and you can have the free web edition. But yeah, you're right. So the way I've got it here, you'll need to be with a paid edition of Visual Studio. So I'm creating an empty, at the moment, an empty website, which I'm going to call OData Service. OK that. So there's nothing much in it. And then as soon as that's added, I'm going to add a new item to that empty website. I'm going to use the entity framework to actually create an object relational mapping layer against a database. So that's under data, ADO.NET entity data model. I'm going to call this Northwind model. I'm going to add that in. And this is that's just a generate from database. So I'm going to go off and find my data. And I need to, this is the standard connection, data source connection thing. And the default is for Big SQL Server. I need to change that. So I'm going to actually, for this sample, I'm going to use a SQL Server Compact 4.0 database. Browse to one that I happen to have here, which is, in fact, it takes you straight to the 4.0 samples one. But I didn't start this as administrator, so I'm going to avoid the inevitable error and pretend that I did, intended this all along. I'm going to pick one up I've got in the sample code that you're going to get. Not that one. So I'm going to drill down and I'm going to get me a database, test the connection to it. Yeah, we're good. I'm going to OK it and then it will pop up. I'm going to save the... It pops up a message saying the connection you selected uses a local data file that's not in the current project. Would you like to copy it to your project? Yes, I would. I want a copy of it of my own, please. So that's just something that does. And then you get this the data entity data model wizard saying what actually do you want, what objects from the database do you want to include in your model? So this is generating some C# codes and classes that will allow you to interact with the database. So this is not the only way of building an OData service, by the way, but it's certainly the easiest. So we've created our model. There's a nice diagram of the well-known Northwind database. And then in order to expose it as an OData service, I need to add yet another thing to this project, add new item. And I'm going to go to web and scroll down. And down the bottom here, we've got WCF data service, which is what OData is. And let's give it a meaningful name, which is the Northwind data service. Add that to the project. And that just adds a couple of little files which you have to fill in. So this is a to-do here, put your data source class name in here. So I'm going to put in my Northwind entities that I just generated a minute ago. And then you have to set some access rules as well. And this is one of those don't do this at home, but I'm just going to allow open access, no security, like all good developers do. I'm going to allow you to access all the different tables in that and basically do anything with it. So obviously, clearly in a production system, you're going to want to put some security on that. But for the purposes of this demo, that's good enough. And then I'm just going to build this. And then just to show you how easy it is to go with OData services and why they're a good thing, I'm going to right-click on northwinddataservice.svc, which is the WCF data service definition. I'm going to say view in browser, and it will just open a browser. And I said that OData services are just using HTTP verbs. So one symptom of this is that you can use a browser to interrogate the collection. And this is why they're so good. They're so flexible, because if you use SOAP services, every time you want to do a new query, you have to write a new web method. Whereas this, you simply change the URL. So at the moment, we're going HTTP localhost 64608/northwinddataservice.svc. And I can actually interrogate. And it actually tells you here what the different tables are. So I can go and look at suppliers just by adding that onto the URL. And now it gives you a list of suppliers. And actually, nice. Yeah, and it's super flexible. And if you look down here as well, it gives you all the links. If you want to look at the suppliers of the products, you can actually just enter this. You can actually enter, so here's the ID of a specific supplier. So you can go suppliers one. So we can go up here and put a one on the end, and it will just pull us back one. And you basically navigate through the collection just by changing the URI. So this is something that your application code, you can do this with HTTP web request if you really want to cause yourself pain and do it the hard way. But the data service client, as I'll show you now, actually does this for you as well. So, let's hook this service up to our phone app. So I can do add service reference, and I put in the URL of that service that I've just created, which is running on localhost port 64608, and it's called Northwind Data Service. Hit go, and it's found the service. I'm going to just change the namespace that I'm going to use for the code that it generates. It's going to generate me some code, which is our proxy class that we'll use to access this service, and it adds it into my project. So I'm now adding a Northwind service reference into my OData sample. And then I just have to remind myself what I've got to do. So then I go into main page, open the code, and I'm just going to write some code to actually access this service. Let's just add a couple of using statements first. It's going to be OData sample dot Northwind service reference. So this is the client class that I've just added, and I'm going to also add the link namespace system dot dot link, because we're going to be doing some link queries against this. And then I need to add into here a couple of fields. First of all, we need to create an instance of our data context. So I'm just going to declare some fields first, and then a data service collection of type. We're going to pull the suppliers back from this for this, or customers back for this particular sample customer. And I'm going to call that. This is a field in the class called customers. So that's defined our objects. And then we need to define in the main page loaded. I'm going to initialize the context in here. So here we go. We actually set it up. Context is equal to a new Northwind entities. And then we need to give it the URI where that service is. So we'll create a new URI, and in the quotes, we'll actually put the same URL where that service is running. That's initialized our data context, the data context. And then we should be in pretty good shape. I'm going to just update the URI on the data details page as well to make sure we're going on the right port. That doesn't look good.
Well, your red lines are never good, are they?
No, that's right.
We may be having some audio issues, but if we are, you can't hear me saying this, which may or may not be helpful, but we are working on it, if you can read lips. Some questions. Are you...
Yeah, please, some questions.
Basically, why doesn't Windows Phone 7.1 support IPv6? And the answer to that one, I'm afraid, is I don't actually have a good answer for that one. Unless Andy knows better than I do.
No,
I've had a whole bunch of questions about the code snippets you're using. Everyone's saying how good they are. There's a Visual Studio Power tool. Install that, and you can right-click bits of code in your programs and then make snippets out of them. So if you want to make code snippets to paste into your programs, Visual Studio Power tools are your friends, and you can search for those in your favorite search engine and install them, and away you go.
Indeed. Right, so I've just set a breakpoint in here. We've added a reference to our context, and we've got a query here. This is the sort of thing you can do, is query your data source, which happens to be sitting out on the web service. So we've got a link query, var query equals from cust in context.customers, select cust. That basically means give me back all the customers. Now, the interesting thing is, if I hover over query, you see what query actually is a URI. So this is why link to OData is sometimes called link to URL. It takes a link query against a data collection that happens to be on an OData service, and it figures out the right URI to send.
That's the next thing down from magic, is that?
It certainly is.
Very
it
good.
It certainly is, yeah. And there we go, and we've got our collection of customers back and displayed in a list box. So the full sample code that we'll give you takes this a bit further and actually allows you to click on a customer, go to the details, edit the customer, and then save it back, and it'll get written back to the database on the server, because you're directly linked up with that OData service doing selects and inserts and updates and deletes. So it's very flexible and very powerful. Okay.
Okay.
Right, back to slides.
One final burst before the break.
Yeah. So I've got a few things about sort of network awareness and things, making decisions based on data connections. So you need to be using networks intelligently. So that means about only transfer the data you really need, not extraneous stuff. And you should always start from the premise that the network is bad quality.
Yeah.
You know, and it does annoy me that you hear this. Does it annoy anybody else? But this idea about this cloud-based services.
Oh, yes.
These cloud tablets and this sort of thing. And I'm going, you know, you want to try living in North Wales, where I live, you know?
There were four of us sitting in Berlin with our Windows phone, whatever, and we were sitting there, and three of us had no coverage, and the other two didn't dare use it because of the price of the out-of-country roaming. So we had this wonderful connected world, which was actually too expensive or didn't work. So eventually it will come, but the point Andy's making is a very, very solid one, which is that if you're waiting for the PC, you have a nice thick piece of wire going down to your network. You're waiting for the phone, you have cell towers, brick walls, car parks, metal frame buildings, all getting in the way. So your network may well be bad quality, and yes, it's a very good place to start from.
Indeed. So, you've got to bear that in mind. Now, you can make some decisions based on the quality of network again. There's a much expanded API in 7.1, which is the network information namespace, and there's all sorts of interesting things in there. You can find out who your network operator is. You can find out whether you've got a network. That's always helpful. Hmm. Whether your phone is turned, if you've got cellular data enabled, because obviously the user can turn this off, so your app won't work very well if you're relying on that. If you've got data roaming, so if you're roaming, you're out of your normal country. And so all useful information that you can use to customize the way your application responds to the network conditions it finds itself. Is Wi-Fi enabled? It's a good one, of course. And there's a couple of methods for getting and setting information about a socket there as well. So that information is important. Also, the way that you transfer stuff over the wire is quite important. I've got a very quick demo. Am I allowed to? Have I got? Yeah, I can do it. It's too good not to show. So let me show this demo. It's just a show and tell this.
You have to share the desktop. Can we see your...
I can do that.
Good man.
I could do that.
Otherwise, I'd be very impressed, but nobody else would.
Look at this, Rob. Have you seen this before? Well, this is just awesome.
Yes, okay.
Right, quick one. So this is a project that builds on top of the JSON one there. Now, having bigged up OData is the best thing since cheese.
Yeah, sliced cheese.
Since sliced cheese. It actually comes with a bit of a health warning, and I'll show you why. So this is a phone app in here, a client, and I've got two web services in here. One is an old school ASMX. And then I've got an OData service, which has actually got a couple of interesting characteristics, and I shall just run it. And since I'm only allowed 1 minute on this.
Indeed.
So this client, all it does is it fetches the same data, which is the supplier's data from Northwind, in five different wire formats. So this is kind of like the serialization thing we did for local storage, but this is getting it from a network connection, and it's very interesting. I'll show you why. So first of all, old-style ASMX. We're just going to get a data set, which have been much maligned over the years as being terribly... Can you write these down? I haven't got a table for this, so that's 21148.
21148, okay. Yeah.
So that's a data set. Only much maligned over the years.
148, yes.
Now, this is the default OData format, which is the XML-based Atom format, 36226. It's actually very verbose, and more verbose than a data set, weirdly, because of all these links in it that allow you to navigate around it. All that information obviously has a price.
What we're doing here, folks, is comparing the speed of transfer of data encoded in different ways down a network.
Well, the size. This is specifically the size of the data.
Yeah, the size. Yeah, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Now, if you do, you can actually, as I showed in the HTTP web request, you can actually ask an OData service to give you that in JSON rather than XML.
Small numbers are good.
Small numbers are good.
Like golf.
The smaller the amount of data bytes you have to transfer, the better chance you've got of success over a poor quality network.
Yeah.
Now, I've actually, on this OData service, I've got a REST service, which is just the supplier's data in JSON, but none of that navigation shenanigans, all these other URLs that allow you to navigate through it. So just the supplier's data on its own is 7,429.
Ooh, that's tiny.
That's good. And then, furthermore, if we do that same thing and then zip it up and unzip it again when we get back to the other end. So we're actually on the server, we're getting the data, we're zipping it, and then we're transferring the zip
format. We had a question about whether you can send zipped information, and the answer would seem to be yes.
And that's 4,300.
So big difference.
Simple message here is use JSON as compact as possible. So if you don't need the OData navigation stuff, don't do it. JSON zipped is
tiny.
Tiny. And you know, you're going to have much better success with, if you keep it tiny, it's going to work better than if you keep
it. And use Andy's sample code, because that way you've got it all built for you.
Yep, it's all there. You can see how you do it. It doesn't deserialize. So there's a bit more. The HTTP web request shows,
there's
a bit more. But in terms of the wire protocol size, that shows how it is. And you'll be pleased to know that is that. So quick summary. There's a summary of that. You can compare the sizes there. You can say REST plus JSON zipped up. Yes, is the real deal.
Okay.
Oh, two slides on. Just mention the Windows Azure toolkit. There's a great toolkit for building apps that are hosted in Windows Azure. So there's Windows Azure Storage, and obviously you can run web services in Azure. And I'm going to show a demo in the next hour where we've got an Azure service doing push notifications. Obviously, you can do push notification service, call other stuff. There's also authentication, strong authentication story.
We've had questions about authentication, how to authenticate users of my services. Azure will do that for you. You can make it do that.
But even OData services, they're hosted in IIS, so you can use normal, HTTP basic authentication running, as long as you use SSL for that one. It's a big topic, but you can use normal IIS mechanisms for securing these services.
And there are OAuth plugins as well, which you can use.
The Azure Toolkit... Oh, it's gone out of sequence. So the Azure Toolkit is available from WA Toolkit, wp7.coplex.com. There's also a Windows Azure Toolkit for iOS, and there's one coming soon for Android. So, and it's all based on kind of OData services in the cloud, and like I said, Windows Azure Storage, and good, strong authentication story. So if you're building cloud-based services, you really want to look at these toolkits. And there's also a lot more information available online about these toolkits. And there's loads of stuff in those toolkits. So, in summary, we've got Sockets API for connection-oriented and connectionless TCP IP and UDP IP. We can call ASMX, WCF, and RESTful web services. The data services client for OData, which is the one, the link to URI thing. That's an easy way of accessing an OData service, but you will get your data as XML, or ATOM format, rather than JSON. But if, like I said... JSON is your friend quite often in phone apps because it's very compact on the wire. And the Windows Azure Toolkit, which I've touched on very briefly there, exists to help you build cloud-based back-end services and to access them.
And as Andy says, we're back in 10 minutes.
For tiles and notifications. So that will be about 45 minutes to take us up to lunch.
With a pie. Lovely.
Thank you. Okay.